I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife who left the system, and I'm now the proud founder of Sacred Birth International, a woman-owned company with a mission to revolutionize the birth world and bring focus to the sacred and the natural intelligence of the birth process. We do this by providing world-class education, courses, programs, and coaching to equip women with the knowledge and the tools to have conscious pregnancies, empowering and positive birth experiences, and the most nourishing start possible for themselves and their babies postpartum. We also educate and mentor aspiring birth workers into sacred space holders and physiological birth advocates in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship, the Beyond a Doula Training. If you'd like to work with me or take any of our courses, programs, or the mentorship, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to find out more. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Sophia. Sophia is a mother of three from the UK, now living in Corfu, Greece. She is a midwife who is obsessed with bringing pregnancy and birth back into the hands and hearts and wombs of women and their families. And she is a sacred birth worker mentee of mine. Imagine my delight to have her both in my mentorship as well as coming on here to share her amazing natural and empowering birth stories. This episode is so very rich as us two midwives cackle away as we tend to do when we meet our soul sister midwife on the same path. Sophia grew up in London to an English mother and a Mexican father, and has always had a deep interest in pregnancy, birth, and in living and working close to the veil between realities. She believes that pregnancy and birth are golden opportunities to find healing and bring us closer to our true, authentic selves. After an acting degree, traveling, and directing a production of the Vagina Monologues, she finally realized that her true calling was to be a midwife. And right now, she is starting up a home birthing midwifery service in Corfu, Greece, where the majority of women can only access obstetric care and where the cesarean rate is sky high, which is expected when you hire a surgeon for your birth. Sophia has had three incredible physiological births, two at home and one in a birth center. The first was long, like an elegant waltz, the second fiery, like a passionate flamenco solo, and the third like an improvisation with the stars and source. Curious about Sophia? Find her on Instagram as Holistic Midwifery. Now, the enrollment has started for the next round of the Sacred Birthworker Mentorship, which is starting on the 26th of August this year. Right now, there is an early bird offer available, and my calendar is filling with clarity calls with women who have already applied, and spots have already started to fill, which is just glorious. So if you'd like to join me and Sophia and other amazing women and birth nerds wanting to work with women and their families in pregnancy, birth and beyond, and deepen into sacred space holding and birth advocacy for a woman's rite of passage, whether you're a total newbie to birth work or already a midwife or doula, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to find out more about the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship and apply. I just can't wait to see who's drawn to the August cohort. Hi, Sophia, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Heather, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on. Not only are you a fellow midwife, holistic, beautiful, woman-centered, you're also part of my mentorship, the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship. So I'm getting to know you really deeply inside the container, which I love. And now you're coming to share your amazing birth stories. And not only that, but before we begin, I mean, you have to tell all the birth nerds right now, you've just come back from a birth. You've slept 1.5 hours. Tell us about give us a little bit of snippet of how you're feeling right now as a birth worker coming back from a birth.
I'm just feeling the birth high. I think every birth worker knows that high.
Yes.
And it's just filling me with love and just feeling blessed. I was singing that song to myself. I'm feeling blessed. Even when I'm looking like a mess, I'm feeling blessed. Even though the life is full of stress, I open up my heart like the greatest treasure chest. And I was singing that to myself on the way over.
There's nothing better. Like, I just, when you jumped on, I was like, are you sure you can do this? You've been up all night. You've been at a birth. And you're like, but I'm on the high. And I was like, yeah, right. I remember that. Like, not that was a long time ago, but like, of course, you're on the high. Like, you're going to crash later. But right now, you're flying like a kite, aren't you?
Yeah. And I'm a double birth high because I've just been at a birth and now I'm thinking about my births, which were incredible. So double whammy.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear about your birth stories and that you're coming on with this beautiful oxytocin high. You know, I always speak about that, how we get high from the oxytocin that is released in the woman. It's incredible how you just by proxy, how you can just be in the room and get that high. It is amazing. I love it too. Oh, it makes me want to go to birth now. Anyways, we're going to hear about your birth stories, which is almost equally as amazing. So with no further ado, Sophia, take us back to, you know, becoming pregnant the first time. What did you think about birth at that time? And how did you decide on how you were going to birth? And yeah, take us back to that time.
Well, I think probably one of the reasons why I wanted to become a midwife was because I was ready to have children. I always knew I wanted to have children. But obviously, the world we live in, the society we live in, is so disconnected from birth, from the body, from many things that nature gives us, that I really wanted to know all about it. So I was like, one of the reasons why I became, I think it was probably a subconscious reason, because there are many reasons, but yeah, one of the strong reasons was that I wanted to become a mother myself. So I'd been studying for 2 years already before I had my own baby. And it had taken us quite a while to get pregnant. Nothing particularly wrong. It just seemed to take a long time to get there. And I was thinking about it today that when we started looking into it, I was found to have polycystic ovaries and I was like, oh God, my body doesn't work properly. And la, 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 la. And then I went on a diet of low glucose index and low dairy. And my husband went away for 2 weeks. And the night he came back, we conceived.
Yes. Nutrition is a big part, and like getting inflammation out of your body and like what you eat, like you are what you eat. It's so true. You know, even though it's cliche, but it's so true. Like gluten and especially gluten, I think, but also dairy and other things can really inhibit you. Can't it? Yeah.
Totally. Totally. The more I learn about it, the more I'm like, oh, why don't we just learn this in primary school?
like so many things.
I think that a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it was basically the perfect pregnancy because, yes, I was working quite a lot as a student. And in the second year, it was all looking at sort of high risk and medical conditions and whatever, whatever. So there was quite a lot of that influence, but I had so much trust in myself and in the birth process. And I knew that a lot of the things that I was actually seeing were iatrogenic. They were induced by the system.
Yes.
So I knew I could take myself out of that and I knew I could make my own decisions about that. And then because there was no point me starting my third year because I was going to have a baby in November, I stopped doing anything at 26 weeks pregnant. So I could just concentrate on being pregnant. And it was so lovely. It was so lush.
Love that.
I did yoga every day. I took the dog for a walk every day. Nourished myself. It was just an incredible time to really be with me and with him, my baby, and it was really, really beautiful. And I wish all mothers could have that.
I was just thinking that, you know, I wish that we had a society that supported women from the day she got pregnant to be able to nourish herself and care for herself.
Yeah.
That first trimester where you're supposed to pretend that you're not pregnant,
yeah, where you the hardest, you're tired and sick.
Yes, and so many women face, you know, the employer that says, "Well, you're not showing up at work. You're just sick all the time." You know, facing potentially, you know, getting sacked or you know all of these things. I wish that our society would support women. And if you listen to this and you have the opportunity financially to take more time off,
yeah,
like preferably all of pregnancy, but obviously that's only if you want to or that serves you and if you can, but like as much as possible. I love that for you that you had that. That's amazing.
It was such a gift in that. Mm. And I think looking back, I didn't realize what a gift it was at the time, but it set me up so well for yes, that birth, but also then for pregnancy and birth afterwards.
Mm.
That's great.
So where did you decide to birth your first baby?
At home.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. Tell us about that decision making.
I don't think there was really much of a decision about it. It was, I knew pretty much from the get-go that that's where I'd want to give birth. It did run through my mind, or maybe I should go to the midwifery center, because in the hospital that I was training at, they had an alongside center. Which just had midwives in it. And it was a lovely environment to be in. And I liked working in there, but it wasn't my home. And then I say a home birth, but actually we gave birth. We were living in a little cabin in somebody's garden. And I was worried, or we were worried, that the floor wouldn't hold the birth pool.
Oh.
So the person that we rented the cabin from said, "Well, you can use my house."
Oh.
Left his house for 3 days.
No.
Yeah, so that I could give birth in his house.
Oh, wow.
So lovely. What an incredible guy.
That is incredible. Did you choose to go with an independent midwife or the NHS?
No, I went with the NHS midwives. I think I didn't even really consider independent midwife. I probably would if I was in England now.
Yeah.
But I went with NHS midwives. And I had quite a few come through the birth because I was in labor for quite a long time.
Right. Oh, well, let's dive into the birth story then. So tell us, did you have any early signs of labor approaching for you at all?
Well, I desperately didn't want to have the fight of not having an induction. I knew I didn't want an induction and I really didn't want to have the stress of fighting for that. So I did agree to have a sweep, which I know is an induction, but I agreed to have a sweep.
At what time did you have a sweep? What week do you remember?
41 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
About 41 weeks. And I had a bit of a bloody show and mucus, but nothing really started until 2 days later. And it's another thing I was thinking about on the way over. I was thinking, like, people always ask you how long your labor is. How long was your labor? And it's so, so subjective because I can honestly say that as the woman doing that labor, it was about 56 hours. For the midwife in me, it was about 32 hours. On record, it's about 4 hours.
Oh.
So, like, when did it start? How did it start? It's how you experience it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think the woman is the person to ask, when did it start? Because it's like those little niggles, like even feeling nesty, dreamy, having, you know, that prodromal potentially labor, that's labor. It's just like you and I were scarred, right? But we also know better. But we also have that from our training, right? Like, oh, you only count from this amount of time, or like active labor, like that's okay, now you're in true labor, for example. Or but that's bullshit. That's the patriarchal bullshit that is trying to measure women's bodies. It's the woman knows. So you would say 56 hours. I believe you. I think that that's true.
Nobody does maths in labor.
No.
So I woke up on Monday morning and I could just start to feel small waves, small little surges coming, maybe every half an hour, maybe every 20 minutes. But we'd planned to go for a long walk around a lake. We were living in Norfolk at the time, which has some really beautiful water areas, and then go and do a big shop. We needed to get all the stuff that I wanted to have with me. So I didn't let my partner know that anything was happening, because I was like, well, it all just might stop and I don't want to get overexcited and it might just stop. So let's just see how this goes. And he could see that I was moving a bit slower than normal, but there wasn't any other real signs that anything was happening until we got halfway around the lake. So it's a 2 kilometer walk and we got halfway around the lake and there's a bench. And I said, oh, I've just got to sit down for a minute. I've been having tightenings all morning. I was like, and he was like, you're telling me now when we've got halfway around the lake, we've got another kilometer to walk back again. But don't worry. I'll make it back. But it was the longest walk we've ever done around that lake. Then we went into the supermarket and we did the shop. And again, it took quite a long time, but he was there and he was supporting. And at some point I said, oh, I've just got to go to the toilet. I think I was about 15 minutes in the toilet. And he was like pacing up and down outside, about to open the door and go, it's going to be a baby. But luckily I came out just before he intruded on everybody else in the toilet. And we got everything we needed and we headed back home. I was starting to go into labor land. By the time we got home, it was the evening. And I was starting to go into that space where I really needed to just focus in on me. And so he left me in the cabin and went to set up the birth pool and set up the birth space. And it's interesting because I remember being feeling quite alone and feeling quite vulnerable and calling for him. But when I look back on it in my memory, it's actually a beautiful time when I was alone and strong and doing it and going there and letting myself go there. So I have these sort of parallel opposite emotions running beside each other at the same time. But eventually he came in and he said, it's ready. Walked through the cold garden. Actually, when he was coming over to come and collect me after he'd finished it, he told me that just above our cabin, he saw a shooting star sort of land next to our cabin.
Oh, wow.
Come and got me. And he'd made it magical. Like, I'd written out affirmations and I'd drawn pictures of positions that we could use, and we'd set up candles and oil burners and the pool and everything. So he'd made it really, really beautiful. And I basically spent the evening coming in and out of the pool, resting. It stopped for a little while the first time I went in the pool, so it was a good sign that it wasn't imminent, or, you know, it was good. I could have a little rest. And I think by about 11 o'clock, I said, in the morning, I said, okay, I think it's time. call a midwife to see where we're at. And I was like, I'm really hoping that I'm 8 centimeters dilated and I'll have a baby really soon, because they'd got really intense. But she came over and she checked, and she was like, oh, you're 4 centimeters, so you're in, you know, active labor.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stay. But I didn't feel deflated, because I knew that that doesn't really mean anything.
Oh, I love that.
You can just go from one to the other in no time. And I knew that me and my baby were doing really, really well. I knew that we were working together. I knew that it was doable. You know, like, there was never a question that it wasn't doable.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Needed, a beautiful woman-owned, leading women's health supplement brand founded by two mamas who were shocked when they realized that 95% of women who actually take a prenatal vitamin have nutrient deficiencies. And it's shocking that this is the state of most of us in our current modern world. But our soils are depleted, and so our foods are not as nutrient dense, and who really eats all their greens every day? I've been extremely hesitant to recommend supplements because most of them are just expensive pee. The cheap one you buy at your chemist is most likely not bioavailable, meaning your body just can't absorb most of it, if any. I truly haven't found any other supplement brand that I would ever recommend to any of my clients, friends, or use myself than Needed. I myself use their multivitamins, both in capsule form and in powder form, depending on what I feel like that day. I also use their pre and probiotics and collagen powder. I know it's clean, high quality, and beyond organic, and I can feel how my body absorbs it. With Needed, you get real nourishment for every phase of your life. Whether you're thinking, trying, are pregnant, or in your postpartum, or deeper into your mama years. With the code THENATURALBIRTHPODCAST, you can save 20% off your first order. Go to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes to get the automatic discount on their website.
And then I called my doula and she came over and she gave me some Rebozo, and she tried to do some Reiki on my back, but I just couldn't stand anybody touching me at that point. So I threw her hand off, and I anybody's hand that tried to touch me. And I was like, I'm sure I'm going to want loads of massage when I'm in labor, because I love massage and I love people, very touchy feely person. And I really wanted to. I thought I really would really want to be touched and massaged, but I had no interest in it whatsoever.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of back labor? Is that why she was going to give you massage or Reiki?
No, I think I didn't have back labor at all. It was just a good access point, because I was most of the time leaning forwards or on my knees or on all fours. So it was a good access point. And
right.
Obviously the sacrum is the sacred place. So And it was the whole of Tuesday, was in and out of the pool and eating and resting. And I remember everything tasting like I was really trying to eat and really trying to keep myself fed. Everything just tasted like sand in my mouth. Anything that I put in my mouth just tasted like sand. I wasn't sort of forcing myself to eat it. But I had amazing support. My husband was incredible, as well as supporting me. He was also like hosting the midwives. He cooked for everybody. He cooked lunch for everybody and dinner for everybody. And like was handing out nuts and snacks.
Wow.
It's like at a cinema or something. But it didn't feel like that. It felt very intimate and friendly, and I felt very held, but also private. Like, people were there around me, but I was in my own space.
Beautiful.
And the main thing that helped me was just making a lot of noise, the water and noise just got me through every surge. And in the evening time, they'd gone through different shifts of midwives that were coming and going. And about roughly 12 hours after the first examination, the sort of evening midwives were there for the night shift.
Mm.
And I hadn't had any examination since then. And one of them said, is it okay if we do another one? Because it's been quite a long time. We kind of just want to see what's going on. I was like, yeah, fine, that's cool. And the first one had been done when I was on all fours.
Mm.
So the second one they did when I was lying down. And they're like, oh, you're 4 centimeters.
Oh, no.
But your cervix is really effaced and there's a really strong bag of waters there. But again, because I knew that, again, it doesn't mean anything.
Oh, I love that that's your reaction. I was so worried you were going to be super deflated. I love that.
Yeah, and she explained it really well as well. Like, she wasn't like, you know, one of those midwives that go, oh, you're still 4 centimeters, or you're just 4 centimeters. She was like, no, you're fully effaced and it's really, really thin. If that bag of waters breaks, then I think you'll have a baby.
Yes, that's it. And this is such a good piece of information, isn't it? Because the bag of waters can do that, can't it? If the head is not applied directly on the cervix, sometimes you can go longer with that bag of waters, keeping quotation marks just at 4 centimeters, even though you're probably ready. And just could just open. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I remember, you know, once with a woman that I was caring for doing a vaginal examination after days of her being in labor. Mm-hmm. And she was like barely 2, but I could just open her to 5, like paper. And it was just because of that, the head wasn't well applied.
Yeah.
That's really good information you just shared there. Yeah. What happened then?
And then I was like, well, I've just got to get back in the pool. So I got back in the pool, and every single time I had a surge, I would just focus and I'd tell myself, waters break, waters break, waters break, waters break. It became a mantra for me every time I had a surge. I don't know whether I was saying it out loud or whether I was saying it in my head, but it was just waters break, waters break, waters break, waters break. And after 2 hours, they broke. And I had these few weird contractions where, like, I'd been so in it and so focused, and then after the waters broke, I was like, there were these 2 or 3 contractions where I was just like, oh, I don't know what to do with myself now. What's going on? And looking back, I'm just coming to realize that probably that was his reaction to, like, oh my god, what am I going to do now? My head doesn't have a cushion, my head doesn't have a water balloon around it. What am I going to do now? And he was like, oh, okay, I've got to apply myself. And then he applied himself, and the urge to push just absolutely took me over.
Wow.
It was just a full body experience. My whole body was just, whoa, opening and pushing. And it was, I mean, a long, quote unquote, pushing stage. It took about 2.5 hours, I think, for him to be
normal.
But the whole time, it really felt like we were working together. Like, yes, it was huge and it was strong, and I was using everything I had, or it was using everything I had. It wasn't even me that was really doing it.
Mm.
And there came a point where his head was coming down, and I put my hand on his head, and my husband's Greek, and I'd been speaking Greek to him because we speak Greek between ourselves. And I told him kephali, which is head in Greek. And then I felt an arm flop out, and I said, Kieri, the hand. I was just sort of narrating what was happening. But of course, the midwives couldn't understand what I was saying. So they looked behind me, and through the sort of water, they thought they saw a foot. So they sort of said, oh, Sophia, turn around, quick. So I turned around, and in the next contraction, he was born. And it was incredible because he came out with all his eyes scrunched up and his face scrunched up, and it was kind of like, you know, like they do, a bit like this. And suddenly, after about 2 minutes, he just opened his eyes and went, And both me and Costis, who was leaning over me, sort of hugging both of us, just went, whoa. It was like his spirit had entered his body and just like gone, Hara! And that's how he lived his life from now on. He entered the room. He goes, here I am. it was incredible. Mm. The memories of it get better the more I look back on it.
Did you stay long in the pool and did you birth your placenta there as well?
My aim was to birth my placenta in the pool. And I'd recently read Becky Reed's Birth in Focus. I don't even know the book. And she was explaining how amazingly women can birth their own placentas, believe it or not. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that. So I was like, oh, I can guide my own placenta out instead of having an injection or somebody guiding it out for me. I can do it myself. I know if I'm going to pull too hard.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel quite right to do it in the pool. It just felt a bit, I don't know if it felt messy or just not quite grounded enough. There wasn't enough gravity. So I stepped out of the pool and had a bowl underneath me. And I think my husband describes this incredible image where I was holding the baby and squatting over the bowl and was just, I wasn't reaching inside myself, but I was just guiding my own placenta out, drop into the bowl.
Good fun.
Yeah, you were just so strong in that moment. He was like astounded by it.
Yeah.
And I think the other midwives, and I was really happy that it was those two midwives who were there, because I'd actually worked with both of them as a student on different shifts. And I really respected both of them and the way that they worked, which was great, because within the NHS, you don't necessarily know who you're going to get. But they both said, oh, wow, you really taught me something about the third stage at your birth. Oh, good to know that you can always learn.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. I can really see you doing that. And that is just the ultimate image of womanly power. I love that. Wow. That was your first birth. And how long after that did you become pregnant again and birth your second?
I had a miscarriage in between.
Mm.
I was expecting to sort of I'll do the 2-year gap, you know, because that's what you do. But no, it ended up being almost 4 years between one birth and the next, which was, I think, what was needed in the end for both of them. So I give birth every 4 years. Every time there's a World Cup, I think I have a baby. Again, the second time round, it took us a long time to get pregnant. I had obviously the miscarriage, but it seemed to take us again about 2 years to get pregnant. But we were very happy to be pregnant, and I always knew I wanted at least two children.
Mm.
But I think I probably took it a bit for granted the second time round. I was like, oh, yeah, the first time went just fine. I don't really need to do much for this one. Like the first one, even though I'd done birth preparation, I'd taught birth preparation classes myself, and I'd had so much exposure to birth as a student midwife. I still did a hypnobirthing course and I did yoga and meditation. But this time around, obviously I had a 3-year-old, so it was a lot harder to find the time. And I was working as a midwife doing shift work.
That's taxing.
Yeah. And my husband would go away for 2 months at a time to work. So it was quite a lot to juggle and balance and then take time to focus in.
Mm.
on the pregnancy, on the baby, and what to expect. And I think I was just banking on the fact that it had all gone so amazingly the first time round that I didn't really need to do anything this time round. And in the end, it helped, obviously, to have that trust and to have had that physiological birth. But I think it was to my detriment that I didn't go deeper in the second pregnancy.
I love that you share that, especially like with all the knowledge you have as a midwife, for everyone to hear that even when you're having second baby, fifth baby, that you do take the time to really, because every pregnancy and birth is going to be unique. That baby's unique. You're going to be different from how you were last time. Yeah, I love that you share that.
Yeah, definitely. And even looking at him now and how he's grown up, like, I feel like if I'd have given him a bit more grounding when he was in utero and a bit more attention when he was in utero, it might not be showing up so much now. Like, I think it all follows through. It's all part of the same continuum and spiral.
The birth imprint, yeah.
Having said, it was fine to be pregnant. I like being pregnant. I feel like a goddess walking down the street when I'm pregnant, and I love it when the bump shows and you can really, the only time in my life where I wear really tight clothes. Show off my bump. So I did enjoy it. I just didn't go as deep as what I think was probably asked of me.
Yeah.
And again, I went overdue. and this time my waters broke first.
Oh, wow. And so, what time was that? 40 weeks, 41 weeks, 42 weeks?
Almost 41 weeks. So my first was born at 40 weeks and 9 days, so a week and a half. And my second was born at 40 weeks and 6 days.
Perfect.
And we'd sort of planned an afternoon with some friends just to go around and chill out of theirs, and I had kids. But I was going to lie down and take a little nap, and my husband was going to take our eldest to our friends. And I'd been lying down for about 20 minutes when I sort of felt a pop. What was that? It felt very different from when it had happened before. And I got up and I sort of started to move, and it was going glug, 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 glug. And I went to the toilet and it was a little bit green. And I know that is called non-significant meconium, because it's non-significant, because it doesn't mean anything. And I also know, probably like I had too much awareness and knowledge at that point. I also know that if you've got meconium, then they ask you to be in the labor ward, and they may or they may not ask you to do continuous monitoring. Or they might suggest observations for the baby once it's born, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I knew he was fine, but I also didn't want to invite into my home midwives who were going to be like, oh, you should go out and do this and do that and do the other.
Yep.
Or have any fear themselves. So I made the choice to stay at home and see if in the next 2 hours my surges don't start. I also knew that, like, I knew too much. I knew that there'd be a change in shift. I knew that do you know what I mean? Like, it was just a bit. Yeah, too much information, too much headspace. So I said, okay, if they don't start in the next 2 hours, I'll go up and I'll have a CTG and I'll prove everything's absolutely fine, and then I'll come back home. That's what I'll do. So basically that's what I did. I waited 2 hours. They hadn't really started. And I was like, okay, I'll go up and I'll have the monitoring, and then everything will be fine, and I'll come back home and we'll have a baby at home. But of course, I got up there. And it just took them bloody forever to do anything. So I put on the CTG monitor myself. I keep my own blood pressure and just be like, can we get out now? And And one of the midwives who was at my first birth was on shift, and she would be the one to come out. She was the community that she was on. She was going to come out to home birth. So I was like, oh, great. We can get that and fab. And I had a student midwife following me, and she happened to be on the labor ward when I went in for the monitoring. We're like, oh, we're pretty much starting. We're going to go home in a minute. But it took them forever to do the monitoring, to get a doctor in to say, do you want to, we have to let you know that you're going against medical advice, blah, blah. I was like, yeah. Give me the paper. I'm going home. But of course, by the time all of that had happened, I was in labor. And I was having really strong contractions. And because I make so much noise when I'm in labor, it sounds like I'm literally about to have a baby.
Mm.
And so after they sort of eventually, I got through all of that red tape, I was coming out the door in the corridor of the labor ward. And I was in the middle of the corridor having a contraction going, I'm going home. With all of my colleagues looking at me like, are you sure you're going home? I got another sort of few steps down the corridor and I was like, I'm going home. I got to the front door of the labor and I was like, I'm going home. But I had three contractions in the space of about 15 meters. And my husband says that everybody, like the whole labor ward, the women, whoever was there and all the colleagues were sort of looking at me like, she's going to have a baby on the stairs. But I was determined to get home, mostly because we'd prepped my eldest son so well and he was so excited to be part of it. And I really felt like I owed it to him to be there. Like I really wanted him to be there. I really felt that he needed to be there to witness the birth of his sibling. But a midwife ran over from the midwife unit and said, Sophia, I have a pool ready for you waiting in the birth center. I was like, okay. So I went to the birth center and they did have a beautiful pool ready, and it was, and she was a really supportive midwife, and it was a good birth experience, but it was a much more angry birth experience.
Mm.
He was also back to back. So I didn't get lots and lots of back pain or any of those physical pains, but looking back on it, I would have really one really big contraction, one little contraction, one smaller contraction, and then a long wait, and then one really big one, one medium one little one, and then a long wait. So looking back on it, it was quite obvious. I wasn't thinking that at the time.
Yeah, and you also get that urge to push potentially a bit sooner. Did you get that? What's happening in when you were walking towards the door?
I think it probably sounded like it, but that all empowering body urge to push never seemed to come, actually. It was more that it was just really, really intense, and I felt like I was doing it on my own. Like my body was doing it on my own, as opposed to his body,
right,
helping himself.
Yes.
So yes, I think I was pushing, but it wasn't the same sort of pushing as what I was experiencing the first. So it just felt worlds apart. And I didn't know he was, because he came out back to back as well. And
sunny side up.
And I didn't know until my husband, who was supporting me in the pool from behind, said, oh, I can see his eyebrows. And I thought, You're not supposed to fucking see his eyebrows. But it explained a lot when he came out looking at me.
How long did you push for? How long were you there in the pool? Was it pretty quick or were you there for a while?
I was actually there for about 2.5 hours, I think, in the pool.
Mm.
Again, so it had probably taken about 2 hours with all their faffing, by which time I'd established.
Yeah.
The whole birth was about 4 hours.
Yeah, right. And what was the sensation for you to push out a posterior baby compared to the first? Was that different too, the crowning, the birthing?
So like I said, it just felt that my body was having to do a lot more.
Yeah.
My body was having to do it without the support of whatever he could give.
Yeah.
Which didn't feel bad. I didn't feel it was impossible. There wasn't sort of, it didn't feel impossible. It just felt that I really, really intense. And there was definitely a lot of anger. Like I was like, why isn't he coming? Why isn't he here yet? I'm a second time mum. This should just happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt quite a lot of guilt about that anger afterwards.
Mm.
And it wasn't until somebody said, like, maybe that's what you needed to feel in order to birth him.
Exactly my thoughts. Exactly. You needed that fire from anger, from rage, from frustration to have the power to push out that posterior baby that wasn't helping himself to be birthed as a baby lying in the optimal position potentially would.
Yeah. And I look back on it and there are choices that I definitely would make differently now, but I don't regret any of the choices that I made then, thinking back on who I was and how I was.
Yeah.
And what I knew then.
We birth the way we live, don't we?
Exactly.
Mm.
We do. We birth the way we live.
And I think also, I really love that you mentioned this, that you had anger and that was, you know, you used that. And it's us that classify that as something negative.
Yeah.
It's power, right? It's power. It's how we use it that matters. Mm. Are we destructive or are we powerful? Do we, you know, turn it into, in a sense, sacred rage or destructive rage, right? And it sounds like you just tapped into that primal Kali energy that also is part of being woman, right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So he was birthed in the pool. What happened? Did you pick him up?
I did. I brought him up to my chest as well. He had like one side of his face was really flat and bruised.
Oh.
I think the first thing I ever said to him was, hey, squish face.
Oh.
But it soon recovered. Like within 24 hours, it was gone and it was fine.
That's amazing.
And they wanted me to stay for whatever. And I was like, no, I'm going to go home and I'm going to show his big brother. We'd planned for my elder son, his older brother, to cut the cord.
Oh.
So I don't know why I didn't just leave the whole thing attached at the time, but I didn't. I just left a really long cord. So that when we got home at about 6:30 in the morning, we could tie it a bit closer and his older brother could cut the rest of it off, which was really, really sweet.
That's super special.
Super special. And we arrived and he'd already woken up. He was really excited.
Mm-hmm.
We cuddled on the sofa and he just looked up at us and goes, am I a big brother now? Yes, you are, darling. And he went to nursery that day and walked in like, I'm a big brother.
Oh, bless.
It was really special that he might not have witnessed the birth, but he got to see him really early and got to be part of it with the cord cutting.
Mm.
I think also continuing on from maybe not really going deep into that pregnancy, I think also I wanted to sort of show off, like, after you've had a physiological birth, you're fine, you can do anything. And I don't think a month or two afterwards as well, I didn't take care of myself as I should have done. And
it demands much more, doesn't it, when you have a little toddler as well? Like, the first time around, potentially you can do that better than when you have a little one as well.
Totally. But I think also you can ask for it. You're totally within your rights to say, I need to be
100%.
Careful.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether the birth has been fantastic or whether it's been really traumatic or difficult on your body, a challenge on your body, you need to take that time to repair and recover.
Absolutely. So important.
And I think because I was pushing myself, I didn't take that time. And then later on, I had postnatal depression. I definitely had much lower mood in the year after he was born than I had with my first.
Beautiful that you share that.
Yeah.
Because it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? Like the preparation for the birth, but also how you are supported by yourself, but also by your surroundings postpartum. It's so common, isn't it? Postpartum depression, most likely from depletion and being unsupported most of the times. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, just feeling like, okay, 3 months have passed, I can't ask for stuff now, you know? Well, you still can, because you're still in that postpartum space. You're still recovering. It takes probably 3 years to find yourself back to who you are now. It's not back to who you were then. It's who you are now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can't go backwards.
Mm-mm.
Spiraling into who you are after you've given birth.
Mm.
Takes a long time, and it takes support. And the first person that needs to recognize it is the mother, unfortunately, in many ways, because it's so hard for us to ask for that support and help.
Yeah, definitely.
The enrollment for the Sacred Birthworker Mentorship starting in August 2024 has begun. This mentorship is for you who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space in any birth setting, home, birth center, or in a hospital. You who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring, safeguarding, and celebrating. I'm calling in you who have a longing to work with women throughout pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum, and who want a deep, rich, holistic, and comprehensive training way beyond a doula training. This mentorship weaves ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth knowledge and skills, as well as knowledge about medicalized birth, human rights, and sacred birth advocacy, as well as the art of sacred space holding and tapping into feminine embodiment and spiritual practices to help you become the clearest channel and space holder for women and their families. You will be so held and nurtured and supported for a whole year inside our worldwide community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. through monthly live masterclasses, Q&As, birth debriefing and sharing and support circles, peer-to-peer meetings, access to our vast, rich, and comprehensive online learning portal, as well as one-on-one mentoring with me. This program is like no other in its depth of value and the amount of support that you'll receive. If you feel a deep calling to serve as the custodian of the sacred at the birth altar, and your intuition is ringing clear as you hear this, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to learn more about this mentorship program and apply, or click on the link in the show notes.
So 4 years after that?
4 years after that, we had absolutely no problems getting pregnant. It was an absolute fluke.
So it wasn't intentional. It was a whoopsie.
It was, whether it was intentional or not, it's subconsciously intentional, probably.
Yeah.
I have the very strong feeling that her spirit was actually the miscarriage that I had between the two boys.
Mm.
And my second boy asked her to be her older brother. He wanted to be her older brother.
Oh.
He is a beautiful older brother. He loves her to absolute pieces and really takes care of her. So that's how it's come to me.
Beautiful.
But for this pregnancy, we'd moved back to Greece, where my husband's from, back to Corfu. So I didn't have the option. Well, I didn't have the support of the NHS how I know it and how I knew it. And there was a part of me that was like, really resisted the idea of having a quote unquote free birth, unassisted birth. I was like, well, I'm a midwife. Why? I'm a midwife. I should have a midwife at my birth. But also, it was a full body no to the public hospital, private clinic that they have on the island. I did not want to go to those institutions at all. And then asking a private midwife to come and live with me for a month, or to try and make it over from Athens or Thessaloniki, which is at best a 6-hour drive, just seemed a bit unreasonable for a third time mum. So it was quite a long journey for me coming around to the idea that, do you know what? The best thing I can do is to support myself to have an unassisted birth and to make that my embodied decision without feeling like I'm being forced into it because of circumstance.
Yes, yes.
So this time around, I did take the time to do a lot of inner work and a lot of personal preparation and really connecting with her and her spirit and my own spirit and fears and wishes and ideas and, you know, all of the things that come up when you're open as you are in pregnancy to the other, open to the other, whatever that other is called, whatever you want to call it, whether it's source or God or
the veil
is lifted in pregnancy.
Yeah.
And I embraced that and relished in that during my last pregnancy. And like you know, my biggest fear was that something awful would happen to my baby.
Yeah.
And then not only would that be awful and a tragedy for me and my family, but my career would be up, up shit creek.
Yeah.
Who's going to trust a midwife whose own baby make it, because she made the choice to birth unassisted? So that was, I had to really come to terms with that.
Yeah.
With that. And I can't say I was ever comfortable with it. Like, it was never a, like, oh yeah, that's going to be fine. that's cool. It was more like, okay, that is a possibility. It's a very, very, very small possibility, but it is a possibility.
Yes. Which it is always, whether you have a midwife there or you're in the hospital, like, as well. But I guess it is such an ultimate thing, isn't it, of like taking on that responsibility. And for the outside world, in case something does go wrong, you are to blame. And it's not seen with those eyes that, you know what, this could have happened whether I had midwives or at the hospital, because birth in itself is not benign. Like, yeah, some babies and some mothers will pass in this portal. Like, that is something that we can't ever, even if the hospitals try to say that they can, like, we will never be able to say that. But the world around us wouldn't look at us or you or the woman who decides to birth unassisted mildly. It would be a full-on witch hunt.
Yeah,
for sure. Yes, for sure, for taking that decision. Wow. So I feel you. I feel you for them.
Amazingly, though, like, amazingly how the stars align, I was contacted by a student midwife from America while I was pregnant. And she was studying midwifery in America, and she was looking for a preceptor. And I said, we talked and we chatted and we really got on. And I said, well, I'd love to have you here and show you how I work, but I have a very, very small practice, very small. If you're happy with that, then I'd love to have you here. I am also going to give birth when you're planning to come, or like right at the beginning of when you're planning to come. So if you make it for that, then you're welcome to join to support me for my birth. So that was kind of on the cards, like, she was going to come right towards the end of my pregnancy. So if she made it, she made it. Fab. If she didn't, we'd be doing it anyway. And so the day before I gave birth was the day that she was arriving.
Wow.
Obviously, I didn't know I was going to give birth then. But so I said, that day I made two giant lasagnas, one from us and one for her for when she arrived. She'd have something to eat because she was coming late. And I think making those lasagnas is probably what sent me into labor that night. Because after we picked her up in the airport and settled her in where she was going to stay with her husband and given her lasagna, I went home, and that night, like, I've come to realize that there are no stages of labor. It's, again, trying to do math in labor, which is just nonsense. But I definitely had three distinct levels to my labor, and there was the breathing level, the moaning level, and the roaring level. So the whole night, I didn't even realize what was happening. My husband said he kind of had an idea, because I'd just start to breathe more heavily every so often. So obviously I was kind of semi-waking up, having a surge, breathing through it, and then falling back to sleep immediately. So I almost wasn't even waking up for them. And we got up in the morning and sort of did the morning routine and got the kids ready to go to school and nursery. and they'd become a little bit more intense. And we also wanted to have the kids there, and we prepared them for that birth as well. And my husband was like, should we stay? Do you want us to stay? I was like, no, it might all stop. You never know. Clearly in my mother brain and not my midwife brain.
Yeah.
And I'd also booked a chiropractor appointment for that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was left alone. And again, it was a period that I really enjoyed being alone. I went and lied down, put on my birth playlist, and just really surrendered to whatever it was that was going to happen.
How many weeks were you now?
I was 39 weeks and 4 days, so I hadn't quite reached my due date, quote unquote. And again, I had this, she did this funny little movement. It was really quite uncomfortable. And then about 10 minutes later, I moved and I was like, glug, glug, glug. So I knew my waters had gone. It didn't feel the same pop or the same something extreme again. I knew my waters had gone, and I went to the toilet and it was green again. So I was like, I just asked, do I need any outside assistance? And the resounding answer was, no, you're fine.
I love that.
Fine. And the next few surges became much more intense. So I called my husband and said, you've got to come back, go and pick up the kids, bring them back. A friend of mine was going to come so that she could be there for the kids and he could be there for me. And I contacted the student midwife. Say, you know, I think the time's coming. Come over. And I remember just, I was really comfortable on the bed. The surges were starting to become intense, and I realized I needed my support team there because I couldn't go through them without moaning, without making noise. And I really needed to go to the toilet. I was like, I'm just going to wait till they get here so that they can support me to get there. And then when my friend came in, I just was leaned against her back and went into the bathroom and went to the toilet. And it was such a relief to go there and just empty myself. And my husband arrived. I was like, it's funny how you can be so much more abrupt with the people who are close to you. And I was like, pull now. Go do it. So he started to fill that up, and as that was getting done, he came up, and it was actually really interesting to feel myself, because most of the times before I'd spent so much time in the water, which really helped, but I'd only really felt the surges and the movement that my body could do in the water, whereas this time we had to wait for it to half fill up, and then it was half fill up and we were waiting for the tank to fill with hot water again, you know, classic house issues. And so I really took advantage of being on the toilet and being in like the corner where I could just really press my hands against it and press my feet into the floor. And I straddled the toilet. So it was like I was this rock in the middle of my bathroom, and moved however it was that it took me. I really used the wall to just press against it and rock and feel the strength of myself against the strength of the wall. And my husband was with me, and the student midwife arrived. I think my husband took a really deep breath at that point when she arrived. And at some point I said, I just got to get in the water, 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 water. I don't think I even made a full sentence. I was just like, pool, water, go. But it was downstairs. So they had, I made it downstairs by myself, but with one behind me and one in front of me. And I had a surge in the middle of the stairs. And I didn't realize how close she was at that point. But while we were in the bathroom, they could see the top of her head. But again, because she was also back to back, I didn't feel that big change from surges to open up to surges to getting down. So they were convinced that she was just going to be born on the stairs. But I made it all the way down. Had another contraction before I got in the pool, and then literally just pushed my husband almost into the pool. I just pushed him towards it so that the momentum would carry us towards the pool. And it was only about this deep by the when I got into it. And the whole pregnancy, he'd been saying, he'd been wanting to catch the baby. He was like, oh, I would love to be able to catch the baby. I was like, yeah, but I've been in a labor the whole time. I want to catch the baby. You've done it with the other two. Do you think I could do it? I was like, well, we'll see how it goes. I'll probably want to do it. But because the water wasn't deep enough for me to be in a kneeling position like I'd always been before, for me to really feel the benefit of it, I mean, I felt the benefit of it as soon as I got into it. It was just this. As soon as I stepped in, I suddenly felt connected to every single water system on the planet. And I could just share whatever I was feeling and whatever I was going through with all of the water of the world. And let me backtrack just one bit, because when we were upstairs, you know, that quote came to me, a woman goes to the stars to collect the soul of her baby. And I've always loved that quote. It's just beautiful. And when I was upstairs, that quote came to me, and in my head, I was like, is this how you fucking get to the stars? And the resounding answer, like I was in connection with Source the whole time. I was asking the whole time for answers. And the resounding answer that came back when I asked that question was like, yeah, it's fucking easy to get to the stars. I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. They have to build a whole rocket and everything. That was my thought process. And each time I'd had to ask Source, it was like going through a portal, like it was going through another jumping off another cliff. Like I got to a point where I couldn't stay where I was. I had to move forward. But moving forward meant that I was going somewhere I didn't know. And I said to Source, do I need any outside support? No, you don't. It was always the answer. And I said, okay, let's go. And I went through the next portal. And the final portal was going to the stars, building a rocket. I jumped through that and I made it downstairs and I got into the waters. And within about 2 minutes, her head was born. And I was lying back in the water because it was so shallow, and I just relished that moment of her head being there. And I, one, because it was just this amazing sensation of her being in and out, that last moment of being pregnant. Mama stroking her head and telling her I loved her. And also, I was like, oh, well, she's back to back, so it's really unlikely to have a shoulder dystocia.
Midwifery ring.
But it was funny because that thought also made me relish the moment more. Like I could really just relish that transition. And then as she emerged and her shoulders came out, I was like, you got to get her, Christine. You got to bring her up to me. Because I couldn't actually physically reach down and catch her. And so he just tucked his fingers under her armpit. Didn't pull or anything, just guided her. And when she came out, put her onto my belly and took the cord from around her neck. I think that was my biggest high ever. We didn't know at that point whether she was a boy or a girl.
Mm.
And I kind of set myself up to be a mother of three boys.
Mm.
That's what I'm going to be. And Costis had seen her labia, and my husband had seen her labia and thought he'd seen testicles.
Yeah, because Kate is so swollen at birth. Swollen, yes.
Yeah. And my eldest had seen the umbilical cord and thought he'd seen a penis. And I looked and I obviously saw a vulva. And everyone said, what is it? What is it? I was like, what do you think? And my eldest and Cassis were like, well, it's a boy. We've seen. It's a boy. It's a boy. I said, no, it's a girl. And they took about 5 minutes to be convinced. Especially my eldest son was like, oh, I saw his penis. Boy. No, darling, you've got a little sister. And it just felt so complete having all of them there. Having now a daughter as well as two beautiful sons. Yeah, it was incredible, incredible feeling. I think I was in the pool for all of 7 minutes.
Wow.
I think when I started sort of shake and shiver, I wanted to get out in birth placenta, which will happen pretty fast, like just old squat placenta. And then I'd put aside a bunch of sort of old blankets and sheets that I wanted to use, but of course they couldn't find them in the moment. So they dragged off all the clean sheets that I'd put out to dry, piled them on top of them so I'd stay warm. After we'd fed her, fed ourselves, cleaned up, checked her all out, we did a little burning ceremony for the cord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really, really special. Really, really special.
Beautiful. I love that. Let your whole family was there to witness. Your older boys got to witness their sister being born. That is so powerful. That's such a gift for them. And the ripple effects of that in the future when they have children, or just how they view women, it goes so deep, isn't it? That imprint of seeing a sibling being born and your mother in that power. Wow.
And even though like my middle son, he was really sensitive to the noise that I was making. At some points he'd put his hands over his ears. Even though he had that reaction sometimes, he still talks about it really positively, and he talks about the experience really positively. And sometimes if he'll catch me watching birth videos and whatever, he's like, oh yeah, that's how Astarte came out. I remember when you were doing that or this or making those noises. So although that was a challenge for him at the time, he doesn't look back on it negatively. Yeah.
I love that. So powerful. Oh, So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Can I choose two?
Oh, you can tell me 100. There's no limit.
Okay. Well, the best two ones that come to mind are to really, like, pregnancy is such an amazing opportunity to get to know yourself.
Mm.
Get to know yourself in the darkness, because we often talk about facing our fears and talking about what comes up and the vulnerability, so that you're not confronted by it when you're in a vulnerable space like birth. But also get to know yourself in your light and in your joy and in your happiness, because that will set you up to be the parent that you need to be. Parenting is also really hard. And if you've got that knowledge of yourself and that connection with both sides, understanding both sides of yourself, all sides of yourself, then you don't have so much fear of one and you have more access to the other. And my second piece of advice would be to prepare. Know that you're preparing for the unpreparable, especially when it's the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But you're preparing yourself to get to a point of no return.
Mm.
And you're preparing yourself to, when you get to that point, you can trust that you can take the jump, you can take the leap into the unknown. And you might need to do that several times throughout your birth experience, and certainly several times throughout your parenting experience.
Mm.
If you've prepared enough, you'll be able to take that leap in full sovereignty, knowing that it's the right choice. Whatever it is that you choose, it's the right choice.
What kind of preparation would you advise?
That's a hard one because it's so personal. Some people really love the hypnobirthing techniques and really get into them. And some people find that in the moment they couldn't get there, or they had an image that they were trying to live up to.
That's
with something like
gentle birthing. That's something that I'm actually like, I really love the techniques, but it's only like one part of your toolbox.
Yeah.
And I've experienced that so many times where women will say that, oh, but I sounded, I roared, I swore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, you used another toolkit, the primal woman toolkit. And that's really powerful too. And I think, yes, if you're gonna do something like that as a part of your birth prep, don't take it as gospel and that's the only way to do it, to do calm birthing, be quiet, or do hypnobirthing. It can help you, but it can also actually do the absolute opposite.
So I think connection to your body, to your baby, to your support team, to source, to spirit, to God, whatever you want to call it, connection. And that will bring you the answers of how you need to prepare.
Yeah.
If you need to sing, if you need to dance, if you need to draw, if you need a really well-written birth plan, because that will make you feel safe.
Yeah.
And it is to the point, bullet point by bullet point, and that's what makes you feel safe. And then you can absolutely let go. Brilliant. Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Connection with your true, authentic self.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sophia, for coming and sharing your amazing birth stories with us. Now, for anyone listening, you're a midwife working out of Corfu. If anyone wants a home birth, they can do travel tourism and have a lovely Airbnb home birth with you in Corfu, or if they live there, obviously, or anywhere in Greece, I would so highly recommend connecting with you. You're a beautiful woman, and I'm so grateful you're a part of my mentorship and that I've gotten to know you so beautifully already.
And I'm grateful very much, Anna, for giving me the space to tell my story. Storytelling, we know, is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And also for the mentorship that I'm currently enthralled in.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.